The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio, or its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
There are some people that make their work just another thing they have to do. And then there are those that make their work something that they want to do. Welcome to Working on Purpose with your host, Elise Cortez. This program will provide guidance and inspiration from people who have found deeper meaning and personal connection to their work life. It's beyond 9 to 5. It's Working on Purpose. And now, here's your host, Elise Cortez.
Welcome back to the Working on Purpose program. Thanks for tuning in again this week. I'm your host, Dr. Elise Cortez, joining you live from Dallas, Texas, which is home base for me. If you've been tuning in for a while, you know this program is a thought leadership series that enlightens and inspires listeners with insights from distinguished business leaders and subject matter experts. Our conversations are designed to make you think, inspire you to ever reach for cultivating your best, and take an informed approach toward leadership and business. Our guest today is Jayesh Bhatik, who is the co-founder of Sony Entertainment Television, a major television network of Sony Pictures Entertainment, which he successfully exited in 2013. He is a senior advisor to Jungle Ventures, a Pan-Asian venture capital technology fund based in Singapore, and he's the author of What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth. We'll be talking about how he arose in his career and what he learned along the way, hear about a few people in his book who have inspiring stories about wealth, and a few of the things he's pouring himself into today. He joined today from Singapore. Jayesh, welcome to Working on Purpose.
Thank you, Dr. Elise Cortez. Such a pleasure. I'm in Singapore. It's 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, and it's actually Monday night at 6 p.m. here in Dallas. It's wonderful that we can bridge time and place, isn't it?
It is. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure to have you. I'm so looking forward to having you share yourself and your delightful career and what you're up to with our listeners. And let's start, if we can. In our first conversation, we were talking about all the things that you've been up to and where you've come from. And I think it's wise to start with your own story of where you came from. And I think you know that I'm an identity researcher, so I think a lot about how coming from the things that you think are important about yourself come into play when you do an introduction. So if you'll start there with your story.
Okay, I look forward. So first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on this talk show. I grew up in a lower middle class family in Calcutta. Calcutta is a city, is a big city on the east coast of India. Very humble beginnings. I remember the day we brought a refrigerator at home. And as I grew up, all through my growing up days, we never had a car. I did go to a good school. So I went to a school called St. Lawrence High School, which is run by Jesuit priests. And I was also part of the Scouts and Guides group, which influenced teamwork at a very early age. My undergraduate was at MS University of Baroda, which is in Gujarat in India, which is on the west coast of India. And I did electrical engineering there. After that, I joined a premier MBA school in India called Indian Institute of Management in Calcutta. I lasted for 2 trimesters. I just somehow felt that I didn't want to just be a typical senior executive in a company, which is what happens when you complete MBA from IIM Calcutta. And I actually lasted for 2 trimesters, after which I quit. And thank God for my brother who sent me a ticket. And I flew on a plane for the first time in my life. So at the age of 23, I sat on a plane. Didn't know how to fasten my seatbelt, and I went to Austin, Texas. So that's where I landed in U.S. I fast forward. I graduated from University of Texas at Austin, and with an M.S. in EE, electrical engineering, and I worked for a research lab on campus. So there was a Center for Electromechanics, which is a research lab, and they hired me straight out of college. After that, I joined IBM in Houston. So I worked there for about 7 years in Houston at IBM in the sales and marketing department there. And lo and behold, I got invited to take an expat job, an expatriate job in Singapore. And this job was in an organization called IBM Offshore Operations. which had the responsibility to sell to India. So there was, back then, there was no IBM in India. And that assignment, extended, to totally of 4.5 years. After which IBM, we did such a good job that IBM physically moved and set up shop in Bangalore in India. My wife and I didn't want to live in India, but also we decided that we didn't want to go back to US. We had come basically for an adventure, and we were really enjoying with our kids in Singapore. And so after 12 years, I left IBM. And then I continued to live in Singapore, and I did 9 startups. And the most notable and successful one of that being the TV channel Sony Entertainment Television. But I also helped set up Jungle Ventures in Singapore, which is a mainstream tech VC venture capital investing fund in Southeast Asia, and which currently has about $350 million under management, and they're on fund 3 now. So there's sort of a brief background on my growing up.
Mm, that was a lot of experience and time to say in a short amount of time. Thank you for that. And I appreciate the pieces that you picked out, because, again, as a researcher, what you choose to share with us says something. That means that there's meaning in that. So thank you for that. Now, listeners, you have an idea of just who you're dealing with here and what you're about to hear from. So now, of course, what we want to get into is I want to know how you got involved in co-founding Sony Entertainment Television. How did that happen?
Yes, actually, there is a long story, and I'll try to make it brief, because obviously in such a startup, then there are stories within stories. So we were 7 founder members, partners, and there's a story how all each one of us got involved in it. But I'll just start with mine. So I went to a friend's place for lunch one day, and he called me into his study, and he says, "Hey, would you take a look at this business plan?" And so I took a look at that business plan, and it was a very brief business plan, and it was on a TV channel for South Asian diaspora. So after a brief discussion, I just gave back the brief business plan to him. And I told him that this is a great idea, but I don't think it's going to fly. And so that day, then I left, and then he called me the next morning, and he said that, "Hey, I almost didn't sleep the night, thinking about your comments on that business plan." And I said, "Oh, I thought you were just asking me about that business plan, which was somebody else's business plan. And I just gave you some honest feedback." But he says, no, this is what me and my friend are working on. And can you meet us?" And so I felt really bad that, I had given him such brutal, honest feedback. And then when I met them both, They discussed with me, and after having a chat with me, basically I told them that the business plan was such a small, brief business plan. They're trying to do a major TV channel. This obviously needs to be cooked up quite well. And so they got impressed with my conversation and my feedback that they asked me to see if I could join this. And so at that time, I had already left IBM. I was on my first startup. I asked my co-founder of my first startup, and he said, "Yes, as long as you keep both, 1 foot here and one foot here and 1 foot there, you're okay to go." And so that's how I ended up joining this pack of 7, which then ultimately ended up doing a joint venture with Sony Pictures Entertainment. And so that's joint venture essentially launched this TV channel, and that channel continues to go. How the TV channels are, they're 24/7. Once you push the button and it's on all the time. So I helped in a bit on technology and decisions for uplinking and broadcast. I helped, of course, soup up the business plan back then. And then, of course, I helped with structuring and negotiating, the joint venture that we did with Sony Pictures, which, it's a subsidiary of Sony Corporation of Japan.
So a couple things come to mind really quick. One is the actual ROI of brutal honesty, right, Jay? What if you hadn't given your real honest, direct answer? What if you hadn't?
Yes, and so this is really a debate that I have with a lot of my friends about, how people listen to the tone of your voice and the attitude of your voice in many cases, and sort of miss the content. And what is really very important for me, which I tell my friends, is really that the content is also equally important. Yes, I need to continue to learn how to be mindful and how to reply with the right tone so that the other person doesn't get offended. But instead of being polite and not giving your honest feedback, I would any day choose to give honest feedback, even if it is brutal, because that's what shows that I care. My caring comes in the form of giving you honest feedback.
Jay, right now, you and I talked about this. I'm working through several revisions of my first full book manuscript on purpose and leadership. And one of my friends was saying, how honest do you want me to be? And I said, please let your honesty and depth of feedback reflect your love for me. And no surprise, it came back very red-lined. So I'm very aligned with that.
And that person is a better friend of yours than most other. I just say that, not trying to be judgmental, but
absolutely
the person
right.
who really cares, that person really will give you honest feedback.
Yes, I agree. Thank you, Mark Snyder and Amy Walters, but to them both, they both get praise for that. So a few things that I wanted to hear. I know this could be a long, long list here, Jay, but just if you could share a few things that you're most proud of while you're at Sony and why.
Okay. So I'll just try and, you know, be concise here. Again, like you said, you know, it was an experience stretching over about 18 years. And so many, many TV channels at that back then, there was only one cable and satellite television channel before us. And so we were kind of the second TV channel that went live. And after us, a lot of TV channels came and folded while SET, Sony Entertainment Television, continued to thrive. And it became one of the most successful TV networks. So that's one. We brought good programming to India. So that's two things we did. One is we raised the benchmark of the look and feel of TV channels. So I had been watching TV, you know, in the United States as well as in Asia, in Singapore. And we saw the difference in the quality of the look and feel of the picture. Now, of course, all are all high resolution HD TV channels. But back then, we raised the bar. So we did that. And then we brought good programming. So we brought things like Indian Idol, which is basically an offshoot of American Idol. We brought Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. There is an Indian version of that, Kaun Banega Crorepati. And then there is this Filmfare Award. Filmfare Award is like the Oscars of Indian movie, you know, the movie industry that's called Bollywood. So there's an Oscar of that, which is called Filmfare Awards. So we brought a good lot of programming, some which was homegrown, some which was basically licensed from US. However, the most exciting and fun part was introducing the game of cricket to the Americans. So these Americans came from LA, they came from Sony Pictures Entertainment. And we took them to cricket to watch cricket matches because we want them to get excited to see if we could actually get some licensing content for cricket. And they wondered when we went to this cricket matches that why after hitting the ball, the batter was not running. So in cricket, you don't have to do that. So the similarity between cricket and baseball is that there is a ball and a bat that you're supposed to hit the ball with, but that's where it ends. All other rules are different between the two. Well, fast forward, we ended up convincing them, and we bid and won the World Cup cricket rights for television. And we started a Premier League, which is called Indian Premier League, which is a cricket league similar to MLB, Major League Baseball, and which was the biggest hit in the TV network. Even till today, it's the biggest cricket portal, cricket licensed program, which is watched all over the world, not only limited to South Asians. And so really, the enterprise grew dramatically, you know, we exited over $1 billion enterprise value, and today it's probably worth billions of dollars, you know. So we exited and sold all our stake to Sony a few years ago.
I just need to say hearty congratulations to that. Talk about a life well lived, Jay. And I want to point something out to our listeners here. I asked the question of what he was proud of, what you're proud of, Jay. And the reason I did that is because that services meaning. People want to understand, what do you mean about this meaning stuff? Well, that which is meaningful to you is that which holds significance for you. So what you just shared with us is what has been some of the more meaningful aspects of your career. And you did it beautifully at Sony.
Thank you. And Elise, I just want to just add one small thing that, you know, the purpose of this was to bring entertainment to the masses, right? So this is in a Hindi language, and this now goes to you know, hundreds of countries in the world. And this TV channel has been entertaining hundreds of millions of people worldwide. So that's really the purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful impact. Now, I would be remiss if I did not ask you this next question, Jay, and especially as somebody who's always learning. But what are a few key things that you learned in your career prior to today's focus that you're up to, which we'll get to later, that you think helped make your ventures successful?
Yeah, I think the one good news is that I came from a business family. So before my generation, which is my brother and I, we were the first ones who ever worked for someone else. My dad, my granddad, my great-grandfather, they were all business people. And so one inherent quality is which I have, which is risk-taking. So I would say that you must have an ability to take risk, and you have to assess your risk-taking profile if you want to be an entrepreneur. If you're not a risk-taker, it's okay. You can be an executive and work for a company. But I think that's really one of the most important things is the risk-taking ability. Then, of course, the other piece is that when you're provided with an opportunity, you have to let your intuition and intelligence help you decide which one to grab and jump on. I think so that's the second piece, because a lot of people miss the boat. They're given some amazing opportunities. So, for example, when my friend asked me if I wanted to join this TV channel coming from IBM, I would have said no. I know nothing about TV channels, but I just had this strong intuition that this could scale into a massive enterprise, and so I jumped on it. One of the things that I did, Elise, is also I made a bold decision to quit IIM Calcutta. Whoever knows IIM Calcutta, that's sort of like the Harvard MBA program, and nobody quits Harvard MBA program halfway through it. And I did. I decided to, you know, seek adventure. And I thought, okay, there's something better, that the life that I want to seek is out there, which is in the United States. And so I came to US instead of just staying put in India. And then fast forward, I also, while I was in Houston, they asked me if I wanted to go to Singapore. So I had a mainstream career, and I paused on that mainstream career, and I decided, okay, let's go for an adventure. It's a 2-year assignment. I went to Singapore. And so I left my comfort zone. So that's the other thing, that sometimes you have to leave your comfort zone and you don't know what you're going to discover. And then, of course, I became a forced entrepreneur when I left IBM. And then the other thing that I can say is executive decision making is super, super important. And so people need to cultivate this clarity of thought. And I've been doing it. I'm still a work in progress, at least, to be very honest. But executive decision making is super important. That's what I teach my kids. I tell my kids all the time. The other part is good interpersonal communication skill. I was so lucky to have gone through the best marketing school in the world, which was at IBM, and that taught me good communication skills. So most of the success and failures in people management, in business or geopolitics, is due to ineffective communication. So, you know, it's either effective or ineffective, and that's really the success and failure according to me. So you need to develop good interpersonal skills. And the last one I will say is to try and acquire a 360-degree view. So whether you're an enterprise or you're doing a job or you're in a situation, if you can master the skill such that it becomes intuitive, you know, then you will have an unfair advantage because you get the 360-degree view. So those are sort of some of my learnings.
Oh, this is wonderful, Jay. I feel like I'm drinking from the hose in the best possible way. Let's grab our first break. I'm Elise Cortez. We're there with Jayesh Padak, who is the Sony Entertainment Television early co-founder, which is a major television network of Sony Pictures Entertainment. He successfully exited in 2013. He is a senior advisor to Jungle Adventures, a Pan-Asian venture capital technology fund based in Singapore, and he is the author of What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth. He joins us today from Singapore. We've been talking a bit about just where he came from and how he got his start and a lot of his early career. After the break, we're going to talk about a few of the people in his book that have been doing interesting things with their wealth. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Elise Cortez is a speaker and engagement and development catalyst. She designs and delivers professional development, leadership, and engagement workshops and can bring her expertise to your organization. She will help ignite meaningful development within your workforce that will increase employee engagement, performance, and retention. To learn more or to invite Elise to speak to your organization, please visit her at www.elisecortez.com. She would welcome the opportunity to help get your employees working on purpose.
You're listening to Working on Purpose with Elise Cortez. To reach our program today, please call in to 561-623-9429. Again, that's 561-623-9429. You may also send an email to Elise, A-L-I-S-E, at EliseCortez.com. Now, back to Working on Purpose.
Thanks for staying with us and welcome back to Working on Purpose. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jayesh Parekh, who is the co-founder of the Sony Entertainment Television and major television network of Sony Pictures Entertainment. He is also the author of What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth. I'm your host, Elise Cortez. So before we get into the book here, Jay, I wanted to situate really your perspective about wealth, what you've come to learn about wealth, its management, and future in your experience. Let's start there.
Thank you, Elise. I think the first thing I want to tell you is I want to just confess to you that when I was growing up, I had an inferiority complex, and that inferiority complex came because I grew up in a middle-class family. So money meant survival for me. And so I worked very hard and I was very hungry to make money for my family's well-being. And today, fast forward, I never want to make any decisions that will take my financial independence away from me. So today, money is meant to enjoy life. I don't have to think about affordability. I only question the value of anything because I came from a humble beginning. And most importantly, I enjoy experiential spending rather than material spending. So there's just one thing that I do is that I have made an allocation for giving and helping the community. And I do that in three parts. There is something called calamity giving. So that's for things like, let's say, COVID or tsunami or earthquake. Then there is one piece which is for micro lending. So you lend money to women entrepreneurs and then that money circles back. It's like the Kiva model. And I give to Milap, M-I-L-A-A-P, milap.org. And then the third one is social impact investing. So I invest in companies that actually do good, but they are for-profit companies. The other last piece is that I don't spend too much time managing my wealth anymore. I just don't want to spend inordinate amounts of time making money on my money.
You know, I know so many people who have made amazing lives for themselves and of themselves, Jay, from an inferiority complex, well-aimed. So I just want to call that out. The motivation has got to come from somewhere, and I really appreciate that you shared that part of your story with us.
Certainly.
Yeah. Okay, so the book, you've had many of other things going on here, Jay. There's lots of ways that you could spend your time, yet you created this beautiful book, and you've showcased a collection of people from across the Indian diaspora. So first, I guess I want to understand, why did you write the book, and what do you hope to accomplish for its readership?
Yeah, so I think around me, Singapore is quite a well-to-do place. It's got one of the highest GDPs in the world, per capita incomes in the world. And so I watched people around me, and these people were working very hard to make money on their money. So what happens? People work very hard to make money, then they work hard to make money on their money, and then they die. I mean, it just sounds a bit harsh, but that's how many of the lives of these affluent people was and is. And so I wanted to appeal to these affluent folks who work so hard to make money on money. They clearly have no need for that additional money. It won't affect their lifestyle. So I wanted to inspire these high net worth families to consider taking their foot off the gas pedal and smell the roses, spend their time and money on doing good. And most importantly, though, my audience is millennials. I wanted to inspire these millennials who are going to inherit hundreds of millions of dollars, especially in the Indian diaspora. And I wanted them to read this book and get influenced and inspired. Most of them do not know what they want to do in life, and especially with their money that they're going to inherit. So the major target audience for me really are these affluent people, but also really the millennials. And so that's really one of the reasons that inspired me to inspire them to write this book.
Mm. And you've done a brilliant job of getting the perspectives of various kinds of people. And I'd love to have you share a little bit from each of those buckets, if you will. So you've got one category of sharing from chairman and key executives. And so who in your book would you like to talk about with our listeners that maybe resonates or aligns with your interests or that you especially like?
Yeah. So Elise, what I'm going to do is just going to give you a brief synopsis of the book. So this book is essentially a book of interviews. It's a compilation of book of interviews. Mm-hmm. These interviews were audio interviews. And so these interviews I did all over the world of people of Indian diaspora who are in United States and Middle East, Europe, Singapore, Malaysia, Africa, India. And they're from different diverse backgrounds. So there are some who are executives, some who are entrepreneurs, some gurus, like for example, Deepak Chopra, some senior executives like Ratan Tata, and then there are private bankers, there are intuitives, there are millennials. And so these diverse group of people I have interviewed to give us perspective on what happened to them growing up and their perspective on wealth, but more importantly, their advice to the millennials. So again, the first chapter starts with a senior chairman and senior executives, and that includes Mr. Ratan Tata, who's very famous, but I'll pick Dr. Naveen Bhatt. So Naveen is now a dear friend, and Naveen actually studied in US and worked in US, and then 15 years ago, then they came to Singapore, and he's a senior executive now in a telecommunications testing equipment company. The most interesting thing that Naveen and his wife, Moushumi, do as a hobby is they climb mountains. So they've climbed mountains in Malaysia, in New Zealand, Mont Blanc, Long's Peak in Colorado, Mount Fuji, then Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. They've even gone to the base camp of Everest, and Mount Everest is sort of the next big mountain that they want to climb over the next decade. But their family, they also go scuba diving. So they go up to the mountain, they go down to the deep sea. Now, 4 years ago, they decided to channel some of their money into kids' education. So both are PhDs, Dr. Naveen and Dr. Moushumi Bhatt. They are doing extremely well, very senior executives. But 4 years ago, they said, listen, this is enough. We don't need any more money to live a good life. And so they decided to channel their money into kids' education. So every year, through friends, they select underprivileged school students from middle school, so kind of teenagers, and commit to educate them all the way through college. So somebody who's 11, 12 years, 13 years old, let's say, and take them all the way through college. And if that college is even going to United States, they will pay for their fees. That's the commitment that they have made. And it is not limited to just writing a check for just their education, but they bring those kids every year to Singapore and they stay with them. So it's just a huge eye-opener for the kids to see the new dreams and possibilities. And every year, Naveen and Moushumi, they also go to the kids' family and they hang out with them. And so there is a lot of communication that goes back and forth. And now they are up to 8 kids. So they are supporting 8 kids. So this really is a story which resonates with a lot of folks who then asked me to connect them to Naveen because they would like to join that bandwagon.
Mm-hmm. And listeners, of course, why am I asking Jay to share these stories is because I want them to inspire you. I want you to hear what lives people have created. And this is the one precious life that you get. And I hope that when you hear him share these stories, that there's something in it that makes you want to live bigger than you are today. So that's why I'm asking him to do this. All right. Well, another category that you have, or another chapter in your book, you've got one for businessmen, one for entrepreneurs. But who did you want to talk about from that camp?
So I'd just jump to bring you to another couple three of examples. One is a lawyer, and if you do get to read this book, especially for your audience, then I would recommend that you read this chapter on Navneet Chugh. Chugh, C-H-U-G-H, Chugh LLP is a very famous law firm in California. They have about 500 people in 12 offices, and they do full service legal, accounting, tax, financial, that kind of work. But they do a lot of pro bono work also, especially for charities. The good news in that chapter is that Navneet has provided a lot of insight into the nonprofit world of the USA. He gives a lot of speeds and feeds that your listeners would enjoy, especially on the U.S. nonprofit system. So, like, for example, 1 out of 10 American workers work in the nonprofit industry, which many people don't know. 90% of hospitals and colleges and universities are nonprofit, like Stanford, MIT, Harvard. They are nonprofits, Johns Hopkins, Mass General. These are the largest hospitals. So the nonprofit GDP is about $1.1 trillion, which is bigger than some countries out there. And in 2018, Americans gave approximately $400 billion to 1.5 million charities. Mm. So there's a lot to learn, not only for Americans, but also for your audiences outside America. He basically talks about how the tax system was set up to encourage and motivate giving to the nonprofits. So I'd say that, even the part that would influence people is his conversations with millennials. So affluent millennials, families come to them, and how do millennials think about money and how they deal with money? I think that's really very interesting in that particular chapter. So that's basically the lawyer chapter.
Okay. And by the way, Jay, this program is listened to worldwide. So we do have listeners all over, in Hong Kong, also in India, Africa, et cetera, Europe, all over. It's wonderful. I love that part of it. Okay. What about from the impact investor community?
Yes. Okay. Impact investor, there's one person what I pick is Vineet Rai, R-A-I, and he's a pioneer of social impact investing. So for 20 years, he's been doing that. He basically one day decided to collect money for funds, for an impact fund. And that's how it got started, sort of really at a very low scale, innocently. And his idea was that I want to invest in startups which are for profit, doing good. Right, so social impact investing is basically investing in equity of a for-profit company which is doing good, and the intent of the company is to make social impact. So that's the big thing. It's not just investing in any company, but a social impact company. And so he's done an extremely good job. And so his VC fund is called Avishkar. Avishkar means discovery. It invests in startups in agriculture, maybe agri-tech, education, edutech, healthcare, waste management space, etc. And now they have three funds, one for India, one for Frontier Fund, which is in Indonesia, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka. And the third one invests in Africa. And the investors in the fund, which is called LP, Limited Partners, are DFI, which is basically development finance institutions like IFC, which is part of World Bank, and CDC, FMO, DEG. These are very popular DFIs. And these VC funds are in hundreds of billions of dollars. So that's really a very impressive section of the book and the interview of what motivated Vineet Rai to pursue this. Now, of course, impact investing is one asset class which is quite popular.
How beautiful. And I just appreciate how you can narrate the depth of all that great detail of what these people are doing. It just shows that you've really, really done your research. And I appreciate that as a fellow researcher. It's beautiful, Jay. We're close out of time. You're welcome on this segment here. So I want to give you the chance. Do you want to talk more about other social impactors or millennials for the next part of the book before we go on to our next break?
Yeah, I'll just run quickly through that. So the one millennial, one social impactor that I would recommend is Mrityunjay Tiwari. He was a soccer player and he set up an eye hospital, which is called Akhand Jyoti Eye Hospital. And so Bihar is a state, which is an agrarian state. It's a low income state. And there he set up a hospital that currently does 65,000 cataract operations. Last year they did 65,000, 80% of them are free. So it's a terrific story that you'd like, and especially his program, which is Football to Eyeball, where he attracts a lot of these teenage girls. And so he teaches them how to play soccer and then brings them into the hospital. So that's one. The second one, and by the way, I also want to mention and shout out to Ami Doshi, who is in Dallas. She's one of the chapters there, and she started a portal called ProPoor, and then she's currently got a nonprofit called Opportunity Plus. So that's another one. But I really want to just spend the remaining time on this section on millennials. And so I'd say first thing is that I'm very encouraged by millennials. That's what I want to tell you. You know, people are skeptic that this generation is going to while away their money, what they inherit. But I personally feel that they are really looking for purpose. And so one person that jumps out from that section is Sarvesh Sashi. He's set up a yoga studio, and now he's setting up an online app, and it's called Sarva, S-A-R-V-A. And so you can look it up. It's basically yoga. He wants to teach yoga and that as a catalyst to empower happiness and healthy lifestyle. He's got some amazing marquee investors like Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo, Alex Rodriguez, Bill Royde, who used to be the former CEO of MTV, Mark Mastrov, who's the founder and CEO of 24 Fitness, and many others. So I think that's really, he's from a very affluent family, but he left all of that and just decided to start his own social enterprise.
I so appreciate, Jay, how you just sharing about these people gets you excited. Isn't that wonderful to feel that way about these people and what they're doing and being connected to it? It's wonderful. Thank you for sharing.
Of course.
All right, let's grab our next break. I'm Elise Cortez, your host. We're on the air with Jayesh Pottek, who is a co-founder of Sony Entertainment Television, which is a major television network of Sony Pictures Entertainment, which he successfully exited in 2013. He is a senior advisor to Jungle Adventures, a Pan-Asian venture capital technology fund based in Singapore, and he's the author of What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth. He joins us today from Singapore. After the break, we're going to hear more about what he's up to today, post-book and other adventures. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Oh,
Elise Cortez is a speaker and engagement and development catalyst. She designs and delivers professional development, leadership, and engagement workshops and can bring her expertise to your organization. She will help ignite meaningful development within your workforce that will increase employee engagement, performance, and retention. To learn more or to invite Elise to speak to your organization, please visit her at www.elisecortez.com. She would welcome the opportunity to help get your employees working on purpose.
You're listening to Working on Purpose with Elise Cortez. To reach our program today, please call in to 561-623-9429. Again, that's 561-623-9429. You may also send an email to Elise, A-L-I-S-E, at elisecortez.com. Now, back to Working on Purpose.
Thanks for staying with us, and welcome back to Working on Purpose. If you're just tuning in, my guest is J.S. Paddock. He's a co-founder of Sony Entertainment Television, a major television network of Sony Pictures Entertainment, which he successfully exited in 2013. He is a senior advisor to Jungle Adventures, a Pan-Asian venture capital technology fund based in Singapore, and he's the author of What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth. I'm your host, Elise Cortez. So for this last segment here, Jay, I wanted to let our listeners hear about some of the many things that you're focused on. Of course, we won't have time to hear about all of them because you're up to so many things. But you mentioned before the break the I Institute in India that you were talking about. And I know you're connected to that and supporting it, raising funds, and maybe other things. Tell us what you're doing and how you got involved.
Yes. Thank you for asking that, Elise. And I met Mrityunjay. Mrityunjay is through a common friend. Like that common friend is a trustee for the eye hospital. And that common friend and us and a whole bunch of us, we went to East Africa to a safari. And he brought Mrityunjay along. And so Mrityunjay and I and this friend of ours and a whole bunch of us, we spent 2 weeks. And that's a long time. And so every evening over a glass of wine, I would grill Mrityunjay, try to find out, you know, more about his eye hospital. And then lo and behold, at the end of that 2 week, I decided that I wanted to jump in and I wanted to, be part of this eye hospital, which is called Akhanda Jyoti Eye Hospital. And this is situated in a town called Mastichak, which is in the state of Bihar, which is a low-income state.
Mm. Wow. You know, again, what I'm so present to as you talk, Jay, is I just think about, for me, I just so want to be able to taste as much of life and give as much of myself to life as I possibly can. And when I hear you tell your stories, I'm living vicariously and with you and want to do more. So thank you for that inspiration. Free, I hope, yes?
Of course, thank you.
Okay, so I want to hear a little bit more. You say this and other things I read about you, but why is the work at Eye Institute so important to you? And what do you hope to help accomplish through that work?
So Elise, the first thing, as I mentioned, Bihar is an agrarian state and it's a low-income state. And they have got a major health problem, incurable blindness. And so the hospital is situated 1.5 hours away from a major city called Patna, and it's in the hinterlands. And so I want to help Mrityunjay and his team to alleviate curable blindness from the state of Bihar in the next 5 years. I mean, it's a bold thing. There are millions of people who need help with eye-related problems, but we're focusing on bilateral blindness to begin with. And it's curable, and so we want to work on that. And then the other piece, which is very important also for me, which I'm going to help them on, is vision center. So vision centers are these optical stores. So after a person gets a cataract operation, you usually need, you know, these dark glasses, and then you ultimately need some prescription glasses. So we decided that not only in the hospital, but outside, around the surrounding areas, within 100 kilometers radius, we'll set up tens and twenties of these optical stores, which are basically optical stores which sell low cost glasses, prescription glasses. And so these are mostly managed by women. And the beauty of that is that the profits that we generate from those vision centers goes back to pay for the free surgery. So this is, again, one of the social enterprise type of idea. And so this is the type of things that I enjoy, and I want to bring some added value into this eye hospital.
It's just so smart too, Jay. I just so appreciate that. And I think you and I talked about this, but I did have the wonderful experience of visiting India in December 2014 for about 3 weeks, New Delhi and Madurai. Absolutely love it. It was a bucket list item, and I still have time on my visa, so I'm coming back. Maybe I can help.
I would love to invite you to Akhand Jyoti Eye Hospital, and we can schedule a trip, and I'll go with you so that you feel comfortable.
I would be delighted. Let's get this pandemic behind it. Let's make it happen.
Look forward.
Me too. Okay, so as if this weren't enough to say that you've already been saying about what you've been doing, one of the things that really caught my attention that you told me about in our first conversation is that you're crafting and about to launch what you call a peer retreat, which stands for Post-Exit Entrepreneurial Retreat. And as I understand it, this is for successful entrepreneurs who have exited their ventures. And I think you said in this initial conversation that these retreats are designed to teach philanthropy, wealth management, and deal with the emotional baggage that comes with exiting a venture. So if I've got any of that wrong, tell us. Where do you want to take these retreats? What do you hope to accomplish?
Yes. So first, I want to call out my the group that came up with this idea. So there's a founder of this idea is Cedric Brusselman, who is an INSEAD MBA, and he lives in Amsterdam. And we have a few other people, one from San Francisco Bay Area, one in Geneva. I am here in Singapore. And then there is one person in Dubai. So all of us, we basically have been brainstorming this. And essentially, Cedric personally also did a startup and sold an enterprise. So he came up with this idea, which we call PEER, P-E-E-R, as you correctly mentioned, Post-Exit Entrepreneurial Retreat, because this is like the last day of an exam, right? If you remember the last day of the exam, the last exam you took in your undergrad or grad school, and you just are looking forward to that day. And when the exam happens, you in the evening or the next morning when you wake up, you feel a sort of a void. And that's what really happens here to entrepreneurs. Successful entrepreneurs, they really feel lost in a way because it's a lonely job. They've exited this business, so there's a huge euphoria, but that really essentially lasts a day, and then you're wondering what to do. So there is one thing is about the emotional part of it, right? Because in many cases, they might have gotten disconnected with their family. So you bring them back into that family fold because they've been working 24/7 extremely so hard. The other piece is to, a path to spend quality time enjoying the wealth, right? So one is to make sure that you made a lot of money, which is fine, that's successful. But then how do you enjoy that quality time with that wealth and structuring and managing that wealth? And the most important piece that we hope to bring into this course, this retreat, is to find the best utilization of wealth, right? To me, success is not just making and accumulating wealth, but it's how you utilize your wealth. And so finding that purpose that suits what they believe in. And that's really the most important piece for me in this peer retreat.
You said something somewhere about the sheer number of people that have money. Where did I remember that? That the billionaires and millionaires. Do you happen to have those numbers at the top of your head or somewhere easily locatable?
Yes, it is actually in the first page of called Early Thoughts in my book, and it basically says that currently there are 2,150 billionaires, and there are 46 million millionaires in the world, and these numbers are growing.
Yeah. So, in other words, there's maybe a few people who could that could perhaps opt into your retreat, given the numbers.
Yes, we're looking forward to that.
That's fantastic. It's so important, and I so appreciate it, again as a person who works from meaning and purpose, that you have identified that you want to help these people move on to their next venture and not just do that thing where they're just managing their wealth. I just think that is so something worth getting up for, Jay.
Yeah, we're excited about this course, and let's. We'll watch it, and then maybe the next time you agree to interview me, I'll give you a little bit more feedback on how it's going.
Absolutely. You can run from me, Jay, but you can't hide. Even if you're in Singapore, I can still get you. Don't worry. So we're getting close to the end of time here. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners that you're pouring yourself into these days that showcases who you are and what matters to you?
I guess two parts to it. One is that I just want to point that, I was working on wealth affluence because of my humble beginning, and I transitioned to time affluence. My next step is mind affluence. And so time affluence is obvious, right? I mean, all of us should really enjoy the power of now and the time, which we don't in many cases. But the mind affluence is that entails mindfulness, compassion, meditation. So I personally, for example, I practice Vipassana, which is a concentrative meditation. But interestingly, just in during this lockdown, I took two courses which were really very interesting for me. One is called Science of Wellbeing, which is taught by Professor Lauri Santos at Yale University. It's on Coursera for free right now. And the other one was HeartMath.com. And these are, again, also free right now. And HeartMath basically talks about the connection and the executive decision-making ability of the heart, which all of us think it's only in the brains. So that's, and then there were two very important TED Talks that I want to just call out. And one is called There's More to Life Than Being Happy by Emily Esfahani Smith. And there is one which says My Failed Mission to Find God and what I Found Instead, which is by Anjali Kumar. And so during the lockdown, these are a few tidbits that I picked up. And the last piece I want to leave you with for your listeners is that I feel this world is in an inflection point, right? We're all sort of sitting here cooped up in a way, but I think the collective consciousness is going to ascend. This is how I feel deep down. The world of tomorrow, it will transcend into world 2.0. I call it the world 2.0. You know, I'm not smart enough to at least to tell you the details of what and where it will end up, but change is coming. I'm very optimistic that the world is going to be a better place. And I'm especially counting on the millennials, right, to be more purposeful and compassionate compared to earlier generations.
Jay, I couldn't agree with you more. I can tell you that from my vantage point too, I do think that the pandemic has forced a hard reboot for the whole entire world. And from my vantage point, Jay, what it's doing, among many other things, but my focus is on work, is it's allowing companies, leaders, and business owners to look at what hasn't been working for them in terms of their human capital practices, how they hire, how they train, how they motivate, how they reward, how they manage, how they lead, and revamp into world 2.0, like you're talking about. So I'm very much part of those conversations and to help steward that future that we want to live into, because I too want everyone, including the millennials, to pull us forward into a better place. And so I very much agree and align with what you're saying, which is, I'm sure, why we're talking. I can't quite speak from the same page that you can, but I'm close in your draft. How's that?
I really appreciate that, Elise, and I'll tell you that you know, there's been a lot of rhetoric in the past about these changes, but I this time I feel that it's for real. I think the world is just too polarized, and I think things are now going to start to come together. So let's all collectively make this world a better place.
Yes, and we've got time to talk about this really quick. So now we add in too now the surfaced additional racial tensions, which I hope the world is at least in a place now where they're more willing to listen and engage in conversation and do something about this problem than they were not willing to do before. What do you think about that?
Yes, I think, look, the polarization is so severe now, and thanks to social media. So, you know, you're either a Muslim or you're not. You're either black or you're not. You're either white or you're not. You're either American or you're not, right? You're either a male or you're not. I mean, this kind of polarization, you're a Republican or you're a Democrat. You know, I mean, this kind of polarization, if you start dicing and slicing, everybody's got a problem with everyone else. The point is, hey, how did we survive all these years? And today, now, because of social media, people are taking sides and such harsh bitterness inside of them, which really needs to surface, and people need to start communicating. People need to start easing off on that and saying, hey, it's okay. So if somebody else is affluent, somebody is underprivileged, whatever the circumstances are, we need to cohabitate and find this peace and joy in life.
Yes, I completely agree. And I would hope, what I would like to offer as a possibility to the listeners is that could we start with that we're all humans, citizens walking the planet together, and that if we can, instead of looking at what makes us different, look at what makes the other person special and unique, interesting, and lean into that and learn from that and celebrate that.
And Elise, I'm very much looking forward to all your writings and your research and your book. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you for the support, Jay. I so appreciate you. And thank you for joining us early in the morning from Singapore today and sharing with us your beautiful, your heart, your soul, your intellect, and where you want us to go in the world. Thank you for that.
And I really enjoyed it, Elise. Thank you so much. And I really look forward to speaking to you again very soon.
Likewise, Jay. If you want to learn more about Jayesh Parekh, his book, or any of the many notable initiatives he's part of, start by visiting his website at jayeshparekh.com. Let me spell that for you. It's JayeshParekh.com. JayeshParekh.com. His book and ebook, What Shall We Do With All This Money? Inspiring Perspectives on Wealth, is available on Amazon. He also clarified that the Yale University course he mentioned earlier in this episode is actually called The Science of Well-Being, should you want to look into that for yourselves. Last week, if you missed the live show, you can catch it via recorded podcast. We were on the air with Heli Bundegaard of the Motivation Factor in the Netherlands talking about how to cultivate and leverage this important resource, motivation, at work. Next week, we'll be on the air with Hugh Ballou of Center Vision Leadership Foundation talking about his possibilities thinking mindset approach to all things business, leadership, and life. See you there. Remember that work is at least a third of our life, so let's work on purpose.